Radio Free Penn State.
Demons to some, angels to others.
All right, kids, we're back. Radio Free Penn State. Got a new, somewhat of a new panel here for the second segment of the show. Continuing on, Mr. Obi-Wan Ben Knovak. Mr. Ben Knovak, how are you?
Great. Glad to be back.
Thank you. Also joining us today, Mr. Tristan Vaughn, Vice President and Program Director of The Line 90.7.
Hey, Andy. What's happening?
And let's not forget the General Manager himself, Mr. Tom Shakely.
It's a pleasure to be here, Andy.
Thank you. You guys are going to talk about the incident that occurred this past Saturday night.
You're talking about victory at Ohio State?
Victory at Ohio State. Well, we'll save that for the sports show. How's that?
That was the only incident that I think really mattered.
The chaos which ensued.
The victory on the football field is the only incident that mattered. Well, that's the number one incident on the number one topic on the sports program today. But on Radio Free Penn State, we've got police pepper gassing students en masse downtown after the game. And essentially, I don't know how many people ended up getting totally gassed by all that, or I should say pepper sprayed. Everybody knows what the heck happened. You can read the papers. But what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to just kind of hand the microphone over to I was going to say Tristan Vaughn before he jumped up and grabbed the phone, which is my job, to essentially chronicle what happened from a first-hand eyewitness account of what went down at the on the streets of Beaver Avenue here on downtown. So I don't know, Tom, if you were there.
Well, yeah, I was.
You saw it too.
Yeah, it was a unique perspective I had because I was down by the Meridian apartments down on the east side of town, After the victory, easily a minute or two after, you know, people just started streaming out of their homes, 10 or 20 probably out of each of the houses over there by the apartments. And quickly, within about 10 minutes, there was a parade easily of over 100, I'd guess, or about 100 people just going down Keller Street and marching down through the alley toward College Ave. And we kind of debated for a minute. We said, should we follow them or should we keep watching the Phillies game? And we figured, us watching the game isn't going to help them win or lose, and we can keep up to date through all this technology we got. So we went along, and we checked it out. And, they marched down onto College Ave. They, you know, just like the paper says, they went up by McClanahan's and eventually made their way to the canyon and joined a crowd that was forming there. And, Tris, I don't know your perspective, but as far as what I saw, I mean, it essentially was a case of at least the crowd I was with. It was basically a parade of people going downtown, chanting, singing, one of the Penn State songs, chanting We Are Penn State, having a good time. And then by the time they got to the canyon, they see, well, there's more people here. The cops are here. The roads are being closed off. Let's hang out here.
Well, from this is what happened with me. I was at the G-Man, and we all watched the game. The game disbanded. Everybody was happy, and we were on our way back to apartment, wherever, and we saw this the beginnings of the mob. When we went down, there was nobody on Beaver whatsoever, and so we all ran over and joined this mob of people in the middle of Canyon Pizza and that intersection right there. And at first, it was pretty peaceful, and it was almost like a parade just on separate sides of the street, and nobody had, crossed into the street. And then what happened was everybody just kind of, engulfed the street, and it was relatively peaceful at that point. There was chants and cheers, people up on each other's backs, and having a great time. I think there was a concern over the traffic that was being blocked. Then what happened was this kept going, and I guess at one point I removed myself from the center of the crowd because at this point I think it had started to get a little bit riotous, and there was kids hanging from the lights and stuff like that. Whether that's a security issue or not, that's up to you. To me, when it really when the police force presence was really felt was when they toppled the first light fixture downtown, and I guess merited a huge reaction from the police.
Yeah, I mean, undeniably, when that starts happening, you know, the police are going to do something. But I guess, you know, from my perspective, it was a, and again, I'm not a police officer. I'm not in crime, law, and justice. So I'm an average citizen given his feedback. But to me, it seemed like a tactical error for the police to shut down Beaver Avenue. Because once they did that, and once they stopped allowing cars to come through, which they had been coming through, the crowd, you know, moved away whenever a car came near.
Mm-hmm.
When they decided to shut down the road,
mm-hmm.
you essentially create a free-for-all zone where people can flood into the streets, can start having a good time, can, you know, do whatever they want because the road is closed.
Right.
So, you know, from my perspective, that was a tactical error because, if anything, I think that fueled... people's spirits.
Let me tell you why they probably did that.
Yeah, I think it was either that or bring in the mace even earlier and try to break it up and get the backlash, which they kind of tried to do. There was a point there before it got real crazy where the police kind of pushed up. This was way before the light fixtures went down. And then I think everybody in the middle pushed them back and kind of said, you know, get the heck out of here.
Let me tell you why they probably closed off the road, because I remember they did the exact same thing when we had the what I'm sure were far greater disturbances, the so-called riot of 2098. Closing off the road simply because if you have a full police force in riot gear coming down the street, you essentially need to give them room to march. You need to allow them to control an area. You can't really control an area if all you're doing is sending people one behind another on a sidewalk. So in order to really truly contain an area, you have to stop all traffic coming in and out of it. Otherwise, how else can you control it? But, Tom, I think your point is well made in that by removing all the cars, what essentially that does, it keeps people from staying on the sidewalks where you can push them off block, push them up. You flood them into the streets, and now you've blocked it off. I remember interviewing students in the summer of 2000 when there was a huge disturbance then, not as big as the one in 1998, but nevertheless a big one. This was the Arts Fest one, right? Basically what happened there was people claimed that they couldn't escape. They could not disperse. Even though the police were ordering them to disperse, they had nowhere to go. The police barricaded, or they didn't barricade, but they blocked off the streets. And so you either stayed on the sidewalk and you left, or you went into a building. But you couldn't go into a building because many times the police, you know, especially in 1998, they sent everybody out of the buildings. They went into the apartments because people were throwing projectiles from the balcony. So they went into each apartment and they said, all right, no more than the four residents that are supposed to be here, like in Penn Tower and these others. Everybody get out. Well, that was ridiculous because everyone and their friends had all their friends up that weekend and they were all up there partying.
So you're saying police told people to get out of their private property?
Well, no, they're telling them, the people that don't live in that property to get out because they couldn't control projectiles that were coming down off of the balconies. So they said, okay, only the people that are allowed to live here stay here. Everybody else that doesn't live here, get out. And so what did that do? That put all these people onto the street. Where were they going to go? 2 blocks away, 10 blocks away, why would they go there? You know, well, where else would they go? So this caused a huge influx of people on the ground to amass all over the place. And you're wondering why you have all these people and you're telling them to disperse and where are they supposed to go? And likewise, in the 2000 situation, the same thing happened where people are being told to disperse. They got nowhere to go. Or they skip up a block or two thinking they're far enough away. Turns out they weren't far enough away. And police still went after people, and they arrested people.
Right, and I guess I have a few bottom line reactions to this that I'll you know get off my chest here. The first is that you know I think I don't want to come off the wrong way. I'm not blaming the police department for causing this problem. There's no doubt that you know if we want to look toward why people destroyed property like this. And made a positive celebration into a rather negative one, I guess. Is you got to look within. You know, there's a gold quote here in the Collegian article where there's one student who says Carly Malenbaum, who's a sophomore. She says, "quote I was treated unfairly because I wasn't doing anything destructive. I was just cheering." And now that quote, I think, illustrates where maybe Penn Staters today don't understand how to celebrate respectfully. You know, cheering on a mob as they're destroying things is fueling it. That's fueling a mob. And Penn Staters shouldn't do that. Not when it turns to destruction of private property or public property. You know, there's something to be said for having a good time. And, you know, I remember I saw Dick Vermeil here 2 weeks ago, and he was talking about, you know, Joe Paterno's problems off the field with the football players. And he said, look, and this is something that mirrored something that, you know, Ben Novak has mentioned to me a number of times. I could have sworn he had changed bodies with Dick Vermeil up there. You can tell they're of the same generation, because Vermeil said the same thing that Ben says. He says, look, you know, when I was a coach of the college team, a college team in California, when I was a young man, you know, a few of the players one time went to celebrate, and they ended up, you know, taking the fire truck and driving it into a lake. Now, the university president wasn't happy, I said, but the players, you know, weren't prosecuted for it. They weren't brought up on criminal charges, but today they would be.
Oh, yeah,
and,
no doubt.
And when it comes to that, when it comes to this event here...
They'd be crucified.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we need to take a more human approach. You know... I know radical feminists and others in our society hate the phrase "boys will be boys,"
but they know it's true.
And if the borough council is going to treat adult Penn Staters like children, which they do through the live monitoring of cameras, which clearly do not serve their function of deterrence.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to continue to promote policies like in zoning, where they create high rise structures where people can hurl projectiles off into streets, well. You know, maybe the decisions of the borough council in some ways are coming back to bite them. Because when you create a powder keg, like we have in the Canyon area, where you have many high-rises and crowds of people with cameras and police, well, maybe you're asking for trouble. I mean, maybe it's both the borough council decisions and the student decisions. Maybe they're both poor.
I think Tom brought out a lot of good points here, but one thing that seems to be forgotten, although it was recently in the newspapers... was that this is not the first time we had a major riot after the Ohio State game. The one I know about was 1964, 44 years ago. And after the game, which ended in the afternoon, late in the afternoon, I think probably 4 or 5, thousands of students descended into College Avenue. And there was traffic in College Avenue. They stopped all the traffic. The cars were all in line. Going, you know, and they were stopped, and students started crawling over them. They were, you know, 5 or 10 students standing on the roof of a car, crushing it, standing on the hoods of cars, crushing them, jumping over the hoods of cars, crushing them. Then the students moved up here to the hub lawn, and then moved over to the old main lawn, and then moved over to the president's house. At the president's house, the president's wife, Mrs. Walker, came out, and that sort of subdued them a little there.
Is that the old building in behind Hammond? Was that
what?
Yes,
were they that's still what is
there?
Now the Hintz alum, the stone part of the old Hintz alumni. Evan Pugh helped build that, and started building it, I guess. And that was President Walker's house then, right in the middle of campus. President Walker was away at the Ohio State game; he hadn't come back yet. Actually, I, you know, knocked on the door and got Mrs. Walker out because I thought she'd be terrified.
Yeah, I guess as long as they didn't burn the structures, then
I had 10,000 students surrounding her house, and so I knocked on the door, told them they're on their way, get out here and stand on the porch to meet them. And of course, they were all subdued as soon as they saw Mrs. Walker.
Really?
And they all started saying speech, speech, and she looked at me in utter consternation, said, "What do I say?" And I said, "Just say beat Pitt." And she hollered out, "Beat Pitt," and that was good enough to get through the whole thing. On that occasion, they also grabbed a Volkswagen Beetle and was pushing it all over campus, and it ended up pushing it into the pond on the president's lawn. There was a pond there.
Okay? Yeah.
And the response was pretty much like Tom mentioned earlier. Nobody cared much. I mean, they all had suitable. Gee, there's been a lot of damage here, but I don't recall anybody suing anybody. There was certainly no videos of students. And everybody thought, well, you know, this is the kind of thing that students do. Isn't it wonderful to be in a college town? Now, if you go down and look at the old Penn State pictures where they used to tear up all the wooden sidewalks and burn them in front of the Hotel State College, they've been doing this for generations. But now, I don't know, we live in a politically correct world where somebody can get so excited about a single word that they think is offensive, and now they have to get excited and offended at students doing what students do. That's why you live in a college town. Now, I'm not in favor of you know, random destruction. And I'm not in favor of you know, sometimes these things do get into destruction. They run along the streets, breaking all the windows of the stores. And here Tom is absolutely right. Students should not be cheering that on. In fact, students should be enforcing it against other students, letting them know in no uncertain terms. You know, if this were the old days and students did that kind of thing, then a couple of guys would go out and beat the daylights out of those who were doing
well,
the damage.
Sure, and that would never happen today because but now we have to, for fighting.
Now we have to get millions of dollars of police involved and millions of dollars of lawyers and millions of dollars of court time to do what, you know, a couple good red-blooded American boys could solve in the old days. But they can't do that because they'll get sued.
Exactly. And they'll be brought up on disciplinary charges and thrown out of school. Two quick things. According to the Collegian article about this, it says Public Works Director Mark Whitfield and the Knights said that the Knights' destruction could cost the borough about $10,000 in repairs. You know, Ben, I spoke to a gentleman slightly younger than you who was here at Penn State between 65 and 69. Okay, right after, got here right after you graduated. And he told me that from his recollection, there were all kinds of crazy things that went on campus here, you know. But for the most part, the townspeople didn't really care as long as it was pretty much confined to the campus. Now, what you described started in 64 was an incident that pretty much started out ruckus on College Avenue, but it gravitated onto the campus, and it ended there. What we see here in this case, as well as the basketball riot of March of 2001, the Arts Fest of 2000, the Arts Fest of 98, and this past weekend, is downtown, Beaver Avenue, lampposts, store shop windows, cars, newspaper bins, you know, traffic signs. So basically, the borough, the public, saying we're picking up the tab for this destruction that the students are creating, and I see them as nothing more than students.
Well, I mean, here I think is something that's fundamentally absolutely false. That, you know, if it's only on campus, the people didn't care. And that when it goes downtown, then the people get upset. I mean, it was in the late 60s or early 70s that the Phi Psi 500 was started, mm-hmm. and the townspeople loved it at that time. And that closed Beaver Avenue and a lot of other streets as the students went along, and the town loved it. They endorsed it until the 90s when they said, oh, no alcohol, but the Phi Psi 500 had gotten out of control. And I think two things are involved here. First, the town did love those things, and they loved the students around. You had the fraternity parties downtown. You had marches downtown of all kinds, at all kinds of occasions. And they loved it. That's why they wanted to be in a college town, so that it wasn't like New York City with, you know, nothing but automobiles and police on the streets. Okay, they loved the students. And they wanted those things to happen. People liked to be in the fraternity district. Okay, that was considered the most desirable area of State College for residential living. It was the safest. It was the most fun. You saw all these fraternity parties and the kids going to the proms and the formal dances, and you had the occasional, you know, pranks and so forth. They loved it. That was humorous. Now, then two things happened. Along came the generation of the 60s that President Spanier liked so much, the radicals of the 60s, and that movement, who said, you know, steal this book and fight the establishment. All old people, everybody over 30 can't be trusted, and hate the system and steal from it and rob from it and try to violate it as much as possible, and the cops are pigs and everything else. They started all that. This is that wonderful generation, okay, that started the hatred and the anger toward everybody, setting town against gown, setting police against student. You know, back in the old days, you know, it was so great. You know, the police were friendly. You know, my dog got loose and was and running around town. And one day the policeman brought it back and he says, Ben, I was going to arrest her, but I forgot to read her rights. You know, I mean, there was a sense of humor, you know, and they helped one another. But then when the 60s generation, when those wonderful idealists of the 1960s, those radicals of the 60s came along, they called the police the pigs. They called the establishment they hated. They wanted protests. They started shoplifting against the merchants downtown, kiting checks and, you know, bad checks so that everybody had to give identification and everything. They stopped even taking checks. I mean, there was a revolution in morality on the part of the students, led by those student radicals.
And it seems like we've seen the fruits of that this past weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so what we have to do is to do a couple things. First, get the students to start saying, you know, back to civility, back to manners. Second thing, we got to do something about the Trial Lawyers Association so that students can tell other students, that's wrong to break that window. What do you mean that's wrong? Slug the guy if he tries to do it, okay? And protect the window and protect the name of the students.
Well, didn't Shakespeare write a play where the first line was something along the lines of, quote, the first thing we'll do is kill all the lawyers.
That's right.
Well, the Eagles say that in the song Get Over It, too. Let's kill all the lawyers.
I don't think that was the first line of the play.
There was all of this going on this weekend. I at one point jumped down to see one of my friends and thought that I would just bump into him and say hi. And I said, hey, what's up, man? And he said, hey, we're going to topple this thing over. And I said, why? I said, no, man. Like, they don't need to topple it over. And I looked next to him, and this guy in a jacket has the parking meter already secured and is taking that away, and then I get away from it for a little bit. I mean, there's people going behind me where I am out on the outskirts picking up bushes from AW and Sons and hurling them over. There's a great picture on the Collegian of a unsuspecting cop walking down the street with a bush poised to tackle him, and he doesn't even know it. I'm not sure the bush even knows it, but And then I went up to an apartment, and I had that same kind of thing happen where a girl had apparently told a gentleman not to flip over one of the cars on the street, and because it was one of her friend's car, and she basically went up and socked the guy in the face, and then he tried to hit her back, and then everybody moved in and got rid of the guy. So perhaps there is still some kind of, I don't know if you call that a moral compass or not, of control on the streets, but I guess the question,
an honor among revelrous rioters.
I think to some extent you have to look at this. I mean, if you look at the one that happened in 2005 when there was a home game and it happened in the stadium and the Clivesdales were downtown and there was macing and people rushing the field, yeah. And there was a lot of you know,
just for stepping on the grass.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about that and whether they were going to arrest people that rushed the field and going on Facebook and all of that. I haven't heard anything about that yet for this, which is
oh, you will.
Enjoyable. I'm sure you will in a little bit, but it, I don't know. It seems to me that, you know, the damage is done, and at some point that's it. It just depends how many people cry wolf about what happened to their stuff in the street, which is also a legitimate concern.
How many people do you guys estimate or eyeball as having been there?
I would say probably about, I don't know, somewhere between 1 and 2,000.
Yeah, well, I think that, and I didn't realize this till later, but there was just as many in the Canyon Pizza area as there was at McClanahan's, as there was everywhere else. So I would estimate upwards of 3,000 at some point.
Sure. I mean, the quotes in the paper illustrate what you just described. The one guy says, "This is effing amazing. I'm keeping this effing light," said Dennis Dune, senior hotel, restaurant, and institutional management.
The Collegian quoted that?
Yeah. Said
high standards.
Well, they didn't actually spell out the word. They just wrote F
good
dot
for
dot
them.
Dot. But anyway, he's quoting this senior in hotel restaurant management saying this as he proudly hoisting his end of a fallen street lamp aloft. "I'm going to probably frame it or something. Keep it right next to my bed. That's an artifact right there that will go down in history." Maybe if Hope opens up a restaurant, he can put up the light inside of it.
That'll be the new place to take over Canyon spot, I guess. But, you know, what's surprising to me here is, I mean, here's a great example of the state college perspective versus another Big Ten peer. You know, it talks here about, it says, after the crowd dispersed, a student who was an employee of Griller's Cafe said he watched police tackle and handcuff a man who ran past them in an attempt to get to Canyon Pizza. Quote, "He just took off running to Canyon and four cops got on him." This is a guy who was probably, you know, a little intoxicated, who wants to get some pizza. So he goes to run to Canyon. The cops tackle him and mace him. Then it goes on to say, "University of Minnesota Police Sergeant Dave Wilski said that it's hard to comment on the disruption in State College, but that it sounds, quote, fairly tame in comparison to past incidents in Minneapolis." Now, I can almost guarantee you, like you said, Tristan, that first, that the police will be using live footage of the cameras that they've installed downtown
to go after people
against their promise in 2003 that they would not live monitor them, but 7 months later they were. They're going to use that footage. They're going to prosecute individuals. They're going to go on Facebook. They're going to use the internet, and they're going to target specific students for the crimes as a whole. And my point is that if any particular student is going to be brought into court or going to have to pay any kind of fines or fees for damage caused downtown, they had better be prepared to bring in all 1 or 3,000 students down there, because the girl who was cheering them on, mm-hmm. Me, who was standing there, you know, watching.
What were you doing?
I was watching.
If you weren't stopping it, then you were
exactly,
a part of it.
Exactly.
Right?
And so, I will admit that I'm just as guilty for that, for not acting.
Well, there's also a video on there, though, that I think you should watch where it engages the other side of this argument, which is it's a video on the Collegian of a police officer taking it a bit too far with the mace and going at people who are already coming.
It's easy to second guess.
So, you know, both sides get caught up in the moment to that degree.
The cops try to take the tact that we need to immediately subdue people right away, and then the rest of them will see if a half dozen get maced.
Which I don't think that they did in this case. But on the other hand, you had at about, you know, 1:30 in the morning, you had people, you had the car traffic, the cops contained the areas to the sidewalks, and then you had the traffic coming through, and you had students rocking the cars as they were coming down. Now, it's not that that's a problem. It's that the first person who gets their foot broken because somebody ran over their foot in a car and decides to get pissed off about it, now it's everybody's problem, and that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and I guess to try to bring this full circle, I mean, you know, what you talked about, Ben, as far as kind of the historical background to where we've come today, as far as the 60s radicals being the first to kind of overthrow the idea of respected institutions and enforcers of the law, et cetera. I mean, the law, I mean, you know, is one of the primary reasons that the American Republic was founded, respect for law. And you know, down at that event in the canyon, you know, there were people chanting expletives about the police, calling them pigs, the same type of thing that started in the 60s. And, you know, I can't help but think, as an example, on the Center Daily Times website, there's over, you know, 30, probably over 40 pages at this time of comments, of reader feedback, of people going on the website and just leaving, you know, feedback about the article. Many of them are saying, you know, the same old things, you know, get these kids out of our town. They're a bunch of pigs. You know, these people calling the students pigs, which maybe some of them were. And
the names of the towns are State College and University Park.
Well, right. And it's sort of a cyclical problem, isn't it? Because on the one hand...
No, it's not cyclical. It's rather a unique problem that in America, at least, when all the institutions of student self-control, from student government to fraternities to pledge programs... we were talking Sunday afternoon with an alumnus from the 60s who's now an advisor, talking about the destruction of the pledge programs in fraternities. When you destroy all the forms of student organization, student control, student authority, and student discipline among students, then police are the only alternative, force from the outside. And the more you rely on that force from the outside and destroy internal controls in each individual, then the more force you need. And the more out of control it gets. So we're on what Andy said earlier, we're on a downward spiral. Every stage, we take the step that makes us go further down the spiral.
I think Mick Jagger said, caught between a rock and a hard place, you better stop, put on
well,
a
we're
kind
not
face.
Caught between a rock and a
well,
hard place.
Well, but you're talking about
we
an
can
evolution.
We start going up the spiral instead of down the spiral, okay? It's simply a change of direction. And, you know, we can go the opposite direction.
Well, yeah, and that's something we'll try to continue the discussion on. I know Gavin Kierens, the student body president, is going to have an editorial in the Collegian about this tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'd like to try to get on some borough officials, maybe some borough council members, to talk about this as well from the townspeople's perspective.
That would be great, yeah, because, I mean, you know, this is the same old song and dance for the last several years, decades, where, yeah, the townspeople see this. They say, oh, look, our taxes go up because of this nonsense, and get them out of their town. And the cops are going to go after these people retroactively, and they're going to put the full force of the magnitude of the entire event on each and every person that they prosecute. At least they're going to try to, in the name of making an example out of each and every one of those people that have been caught, whether at the time or retroactively, for either doing anything, for being there, for ripping up a lamppost, or whatever they were doing. So we'll see what happens and how it plays out. We'll hopefully get some borough people to talk about it. But that's going to wrap it up. We're out of time today, folks. We'll be talking about the big Sarah Palin event going on tomorrow night. Also, Bill Clinton coming to campus as well. All that and more on Radio Free Penn State tomorrow at 5. The Sports Blitz is up next.
The Lion, 90.7 FM.